This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Anderson, Agostino & Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino & Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome to the latest Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. Pete Sampson, Tim O'Malley, previewing Navy, talking a little bit of Senior Day. We've got questions from our readers as well. But first we get into the whole Senior Day stuff, because we go through this awkward dance with guys who aren't sure they're going to come back or not. So, but when you look at the list, there are 11 guys that could return. It's inconceivable that they all would or would be asked back. But among this group of Jonathan Bonner, Jay Hayes, Tyler Newsome, Drew Tranquil, Quentin Nelson, Alex Bars, Nick Wisher, Sam Mustafer, Nick Watkins, Jimmy Byrne, Pete Mwakwa, there are at least the guts of next year's team in a fifth-year class, which can be fairly significant, especially at defensive and offensive line, because those are sort of old, strong positions, and Notre Dame usually does well when they have some help at those spots.
The must-haves are of the four linemen, of course. Well, Mustafer said he's coming back. Bars is going to come back. It would just be a weird, you know, go pro to become a seventh-round or sixth-round draft pick. Yeah, I'm not disparaging him at all. It's just he's not ready to go pro and take on men in the NFL.
He's not good enough right now.
So Mustafer and Bars, you would assume, and then Hayes and Bonner also have nowhere to go in terms of, unless they're going the free agent route.
Yeah.
But they can be really good. Jay Hayes can be a really good fifth-year player next year. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan Bonner can be very solid. Jonathan Bonner's gotten better as the season has progressed, I would say, in kind of an under-the-radar way. He's not going to be an impact player, but he'd be huge to have return. You'd have Hayes, Bonner, Tillery, and Dalen Hayes, and Khalid Kareem. That's the makings of a nice defensive line right there. Those four will be asked back, begged back, needed back. I don't know why Tyler Newsome would leave, and there's no one waiting in the wings to all of a sudden take over and punt better. So Newsome will be asked back, and I would assume come back. The interesting ones, and I believe Nick Wisher will be back, because you want four tight ends you can rely on at Notre Dame. If Cole Kmet gets injured in the spring and Alize Mack gets injured in August, you're not just going to go roll out with Brock Wright. So I know people love to bury 22-year-old backup tight ends like Nick Wisher, but coaching staffs don't. I would assume Nick Wisher, you know, with the class gets as big as they want it, as you and Tom and Kevin have pointed out, there are going to be some guys that are, this happened a couple years ago, where they have 90 after signing day, and it's got to get whittled down, but it always gets whittled down. Yeah. That year it was 90 going into 2015, 90 players. It ended up at 83, just with summer attrition.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll happen again, and I think Nick Wisher will be back. That leaves us Mwakwa and Byrne, I would assume not.
I don't know, there's not roles for those guys.
No, Mwakwa doesn't dress, and Byrne, he's really never played. I guess if this is one of those teams that had 83 guys on signing day, you'd bring Byrne back because you have a third-string lineman that's a senior or a fifth-year. They like to have those guys in the locker room. So Tranquil's got the decision, right?
Mm-hmm.
It leaves Nick Watkins, whose decision could be a little tougher than people think, because Sean Crawford, Julian Love, and Troy Pride might enter the spring ahead of him. Dante Vaughn is an up-and-coming guy, but Notre Dame will ask him back. Because you need five corners, and they have nobody, you know, you're not going to go with a freshman. So he'll be asked back. I just wonder if, I would assume he'll come back, but he has to compete for a job as a fifth-year senior. That's a rarity for a returning starter.
Yeah, I definitely am with you. I think the sort of the fifth-year class hinges on, probably mostly on Tranquil. I think you could survive Watkins or no Watkins.
Yeah.
You certainly would love to have him back. But Tranquil, to me, is one of the most important decisions, because what happens at the linebacker position next year is going to be a complete rebuild without him. But it's pretty functional with him.
Right.
And so that's a big swing to go from Drew Tranquil to Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, Shane Simon. I don't really know where you would go, because I think Asmer Bilal probably will move inside, and that's a guy that has a lot to prove that he can be a good quality linebacker anyway.
It's a huge loss because of the depth, but it's also a pretty big loss because of Drew Tranquil's talent, fit at the position, fit at the team, be a two-time captain, very respected player. I would think Drew Tranquil at this point, and I know everything he has going for him to leave, I would think Drew Tranquil might want to come back and play one more year of college football. He'll definitely put his name in. I don't think his grade would be that high. I think he would have to become, I'm not saying he couldn't become a good pro, because he's so versatile, but I don't know how high his grade would be. And that's what you might want
to
look at.
You would think he would probably get a return to school grade.
Right. Because they do first round, second round, and return to school, basically, right?
Sheldon Day got returned to school.
He's going to get a return to school grade.
Yeah.
He's a good player. It doesn't mean, that doesn't mean anything bad about you. It's just, that's not leave early.
Yeah. I think that would be critical. But that's, I'm just sort of curious to see how he reacts on Saturday. Because you can tell sometimes the guys who are departing. Like, I don't really need to know, to watch Quentin Nelson to know that he's leaving. But that's going to be he will have a much different experience on Saturday than what Bonner or Hayes or Mustafa or Bars will have.
And there's logic for Tranquil, too, because of the two injuries.
Yeah. I mean,
it's better to get your, you know, not to use the running back analogy, but there's tread on his tires that's not on everyone, so maybe getting into league and can always go back in your career, and it's the nest egg of playing in the NFL for 3 years is great.
Yeah, as you're getting married this offseason.
So no faulting him either way, I would assume. My gut is he might just want to, might like it enough to come back.
Yeah.
That was kind of the way I look at it. He's pretty big. Backer of the program. He has no reason to want to escape.
Not right
Every
now.
Every once in a while, sure. There's, like, Nick Watkins might not start. He has. Now, he would end up playing. Like, if you leave and you're Nick Watkins because you think you might not win the job, I mean, one corner gets hurt immediately and you would have won the job. So it's a bad idea. But, you know, you can at least, you can rationalize something out of Nick Watkins. I don't think you can rationalize the other ones, really. I can't imagine.
Yeah, and also with Watkins, I don't think we know how healthy is he. You know, I think he's had, you would describe his play as descending from where it was in September. He also has
lost his job.
He also has tendonitis, so I don't really know how, you know, how those two things fit together.
Oh, it all counts. I mean, whether you're hurt or not, you can't get in there, then your play's descending.
If the senior, I'm curious your thoughts on the senior class overall. If they win out, they'll finish 33-15. Wouldn't be the winningest senior class of the Kelly regime, but they do win out. It would be Notre Dame's sixth 11-win season in the modern era. Which I think, if you look at it that way, and you're putting this team in a group, it's an arbitrary number, I know, but you're putting this team in a group with 73-88. 77, 89, 2012.
I did a story on it because of they play more games. So
sure.
If you kind of look at it, you would have to totally eliminate error per seasons other than 1973. You know, it's not even the 66 team is included in this because they just didn't play games in a bowl game. But if you look at it by losses, one or two losses, of course zero, they are 10th or 12th best by absolutely any margin, anybody's argument, including all of Era's teams and all of Lou's teams for the modern era. We use Era Parsegian 64 as the modern era. They're the 10th best team since Era Parsegian started coaching at Notre Dame. That'd be pretty good. That's for your senior year.
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive. You couldn't even argue them lower than 12th. This is kind of, I wrote a story on this yesterday. You know, so their seasons would be the 8-5 year where they contended until November 9th, basically, out in Arizona. They brought a lot of fun. Now, a lot of those guys played. They weren't a lot of friends. Like, Drew Tranquil got in. Andrew Trimbetti got in. Morgan, unfortunately, had to play, and that's when it all went downhill. You wouldn't really put him.
Martini as well.
Martini played a lot. The next year was the 10-win team, and there were a lot of contributors to it. Last year, obviously, was something that would be held against them, and then this year would be outstanding. It's not the most even 33 wins, but you could argue it's better than. Just remove anybody that played in 2012, remove those classes, because they got to play for a championship. It's. Their accomplishments over a couple of years is probably as good as most in recent memory in the millennium.
I think you'd have to look at this class and say they gave you a ride if you were a fan.
3 of the 4 years.
They were on November 1st, they were ranked in the top 10 3 out of 4 years.
They gave you a ride in 4 years. Just one ride was really hideous. But there was...
Yes.
No, but it was there. They had 3 enjoyable years. I mean, as a fan, I've always looked at this differently. I like the teams growing up. I like the teams that were in contention. And even though Notre Dame all-time bottom out in 2014 with injuries and everything, that year is somewhat more fun than a year where you start 3-2. And you're just out of the conversation. Who cares if the 2013 team that went 9-4 was better or not than the next year's team? The 2013 team didn't contend after September 10th.
Yeah, the season was over.
You like the teams. I've always, if you're watching it from that perspective, now if you're a coach, you're like, you're crazy. I don't want to lose my last 4 games compared to starting 3-2. Yeah. But as a fan, I think the 2014 had its moments. A lot of them.
Yeah.
That's their first year.
Bowl game included.
Yeah.
That
was a big deal. I mean, that's the biggest bowl win since 1993.
Right. Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's another thing with this team, and Drew Tranquil referenced it on Wednesday, that they have a chance to be the first Notre Dame team to win a major bowl game. I think he said in forever.
He's right.
24 years is forever.
It is college football. That is forever.
So that's, I mean, that would be significant.
They do have to win out.
They do have to win out. That is very tricky.
Yeah.
But I think it...
There's quality year this year if they don't win out. I'm just saying for a legacy of a class.
Despite last weekend, I still feel kind of good about it. Just not nearly as excited a week ago when you're on this podcast. They're going to beat Miami 34-17.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, what did I, yeah, it was right around there. Yeah, it was 38-24. They had eight, but yeah, I need to see who the bowl team is now. Of course, the opponent. Whereas last week, I wouldn't be too worried about the bowl team.
Yeah,
versus it was Alabama, which was more fun to think about than what the bowl team is going to be. How about the drop to eight? What did you? I thought Notre Dame got a lot of respect for their solid season by only dropping to eight.
Yeah, I mean,
murdered like that.
They have 20-point wins over, I think, three teams ranked between 11 and 20.
Yeah, I think it's great that they got that respect. I didn't see it coming because it was such a public flogging. I thought that maybe there would be... Notre Dame tends to drop a little bit
I was conditioned to think that Ohio State would automatically be in front of them.
no matter what.
It didn't work out that way.
Sometimes even in a win, you figure it'll happen. So that...
Yeah, I just thought that, you know, being eighth, it was interesting to hear that Brandon Wimbush referenced, hey, we still have a chance to make the playoffs on Wednesday. I was like,
yeah, I know what he means by being eighth, but they wouldn't keep moving up if people start losing in front of them. It would just be some reshuffling to keep a team that got murdered out of the
playoffs. I mean, it's like, there's a path for them to get there, but it's like a 12-team parlay type of path. But being eighth means that, without question, if they win out, they will go to a New Year's Six bowl game. Most likely the Cotton, based on projections that you read around the interwebs, there's a chance it could be the Orange if certain things break their way. You know, if they were in the Orange Bowl, it probably would mean Miami was in the playoffs and then they would draw Clemson there. And you'd be going back to Hard Rock Stadium.
Wouldn't be allowed.
No, it wouldn't. So I'm of the mindset that I know there are some fans that would rather win the Camping World Bowl than lose the Cotton Bowl. I'm just saying in a general sense, not necessarily this year. Yeah. I'm of the mindset, keep playing those games
because
you cannot win those games if you're not playing those games.
There is no worse bowl game for Notre Dame than the Hawaii and Pinstripe Bowl and those wins. Those wins, they don't even need to exist. It's better than losing. But you know what the point of that game is? Just don't lose and leave. That's what Notre Dame, in the Pinstripe Bowl, a team that just played for the national title 356 days prior, is playing the Pinstripe Bowl. It doesn't matter that they won that game. It's totally irrelevant. You could have just not played. So I know that they had trouble with Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl, getting behind by three touchdowns. They were all injured. They were still in the Fiesta Bowl. It was better for the program to be in that situation and get beaten by a better team.
Moving it forward to this weekend against Navy on Senior Day. Navy's somewhat un-Navy-ish. One, they're really banged up at quarterback. They don't have sort of the triple threat of a Keenan Reynolds. They really don't even have a double threat, frankly, in these guys. Whoever they face at quarterback really will be one of the worst quarterbacks they've faced. At least the quarterbacks who have beaten them.
Right. They had worse than 11-12.
They've played worse Navy quarterbacks, and they've crushed those teams. But I said this at the beginning of the year, it still holds true. A good Notre Dame team crushes Navy. This is a good Notre Dame team. Bonus, this is not a very good Navy team. So I guess I look at this game, if you put Keenan Reynolds on this team, then I'd be like,
because there's human nature of a letdown.
Could be awkward. Experienced quarterback can do a little bit of everything. The quarterbacks that they have now running the show are all sort of single threat type guys. Zach Abbey is more of your between the tackles, cannot pitch the ball very effectively, so the slot back is sort of mitigated out. Malcolm Perry is hurt, ankle sprain. More of an exterior runner. Bill Wagner, the guy from that I do the insider preview with, said that he's probably 165 pounds. Like, he would get blown up. And then the third guy is Garrett Lewis, who has more passing attempts this year than rushing attempts. He's actually more of just a passing quarterback. That's not going to work either. So, I mean, I just sort of look at Navy, and I don't feel like they're equipped to really trouble Notre Dame in the way that Navy almost always is equipped to trouble Notre Dame, including last year with Will Wirth.
Will Wirth was super strong, and he was pretty adept at the pitch, too. That's the key. He finished every run gaining 2 extra yards. And now, that I don't think that would happen against Notre Dame this year, because I think they're a stronger defense. They're more physical than they used to be. Much more physical than they were last year. We're comparing it to last year at this point. I think having Perry would have been a little bit of a problem. And I don't mean they're going to lose the game problem. I just mean he's that quick. 282 yards, you know, when you're... 280 yards, 4 touchdowns last week, missing the last drive. He would have been a guy that gives them an extra touchdown in this game. But you're right. I don't think this is the type of Navy team that can handle Notre Dame. No Notre Dame team that's good is going to stop scoring against Navy anyway.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. If everything broke great for Navy and they scored 27 points, I fully expect Notre Dame to have a minimum of 42 points in this game. So that would be if Navy's scoring, I'm saying.
Bill Wagner made an interesting point when I was talking to him about, you know, when Navy gives Notre Dame trouble, usually Notre Dame is giving itself trouble by trying to be balanced for no reason at all. Considering what happened with Brandon Wimbush last week, would you anticipate Notre Dame forcing the pass to get it fixed, and treat some of the game as, like, a bit of a practice? Or do you think they're just going to run it 57 times and say, screw it, let's just get out of here and go to Stanford?
I would have completely thought the latter until we kind of went over Navy's struggle stopping the pass. Now I'm concerned.
They're terrible.
Now I'm concerned.
It's just too inviting.
It's too inviting. But they should. I mean, they should be able to run them over easily as well. I would think. I would think they want to get in and out of here with we're going to run the ball a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have 11 possessions. We're going to score touchdowns on 7 of them and get out of here. Let Brandon Wimbush practice passing in December. It's time to run the ball.
It says what bowl practice
it is for. It is time to run the ball, and I don't think they will fall into that trap. I said that 1 week ago, and was completely wrong.
We were wrong about a lot last week.
They couldn't protect Brandon Wimbush last week, though, and they would be able to protect Brandon Wimbush in this game, so that is where I could see. Look, they come out throwing a lot, and I ended up going back. I don't know why I didn't do this before last week's game, because they came out throwing. They do that a lot in games, because...
It's fine.
It's fine. It's just you got to settle in and run. That never happens. So they come out throwing. I don't think Notre Dame fans should worry if all of a sudden they're throwing 3 and outs, 3 passes on the second series. Then I would be mildly concerned that they haven't remembered.
Yeah, it's mistakes. I feel like it may be a bit of a weird stadium vibe if they come out and throw and it's unsuccessful, or even if they come out and run and it's unsuccessful. I don't think the team will be affected by it that much, but I do think it will be a noticeable if they go 3 and out to start the game, especially if Navy goes down and scores right away.
It's the most angst I can imagine a fan base having for a top 8 team that's 8-2 that ruined USC and handled NC State and handled Michigan State. It's fair because of what happened, and people were just set up. They were teed up for the Notre Dame moment last week, and it was the exact opposite. So I think it's going to be a weird vibe in that stadium because it's such a successful team, a fun team to watch that had a terrible game, but that terrible game was 7 days ago. It let everybody down. People took it personally. I mean, more so, don't you think, than usual, that people just took that personally? Like, I can't believe I was...
Hoodwinked!
I thought hoodwinked again. I thought we were going to... Yeah, it seemed like everybody would jump back on, everybody jumped back off. So it's too good of a team to jump back off, but I know it's going to be the sleepiest stadium vibe you can find. And sometimes it's on senior day anyway.
Yeah, that's true. And look, that's... Notre Dame has 2 losses. They got blown out by the 3rd-best team in the country, and they lost by 1 point to the 7th-best team in the country. Navy is nowhere near that. Navy allowed, 40 points to SMU last week, 43-40 win. I watched, the only Navy I've really watched live was their game against Temple. They were terrible. I couldn't even believe what I was watching. The offense was so bad.
Well, I think it's fair to say they were, they had Reynolds, but I think it's fair to say they were better in 13, 14, obviously 15, and 16 with Wirth than they are now. They're just a better, Navy was a better team each of the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the years they were beating Notre Dame. There's a 2-year lull in there. They were horrid, 2011, 2012. But they've been pretty good for a while, and this isn't a horrid team, but I don't think they're anywhere near as dangerous as the 4 that preceded them.
Yeah, they're getting a jump on their season with curse by being bad right now. instead of waiting till next season.
What happens.
So overall pick, I'll start. I have a hard time seeing Notre Dame not getting the 40s. So I'll go 49-17. I think Notre Dame's defense will give up some points early. It wouldn't shock me if at the end of the first quarter it was 14-10. But from there, I think Notre Dame probably will roll with its run game, whether that is Josh Adams or Dexter Williams or Tony Jones or Deion McIntosh or CJ Holmes. I really don't think it's going to matter. It wouldn't surprise me if all five of them played extensively. We haven't seen any 33 trucking paraphernalia all week. They seem to be moving on to the Rockne Heritage uniform in terms of merch. So
I was wondering what was going to happen.
Yeah, it's been tabled for the time being. But if Josh Adams run for 200 yards, maybe he'll be back. But I just don't see Navy having the offensive material at quarterback to bedevil Notre Dame in the way that they have in the past.
Yeah, I'm in the 45-21 range. Think about 11 possessions is what usually happens. Six last year was an anomaly. I know Brian Kelly's mentioned that may never happen again. They did have 9 possessions, kind of looking back, one of those Keenan Reynolds years. I think it was 2013, but it's usually 11, 12 possessions. With 11 possessions, I think Notre Dame gets 6 touchdowns, a couple of punts and a field goal, and probably a turnover when they're trying to find something downfield. Navy seems to find a way to do those things, especially at Notre Dame Stadium. But I don't know. They just don't have the offense. They have a cool offense. They just don't have the personnel to run it quite as well as they normally do.
And this was another point that I made earlier in the week in the Insider preview, because Bill Wagner seemed to indicate that he felt like Navy would be not conceding the game, but like holding back for Army. Like Army is a much bigger deal than Notre Dame, as it always is for Navy. Army's really good now. Navy's very banged up at quarterback. So I think Brian Kelly referenced on Tuesday is like, you got to go back and watch 10 years of tape. You're seeing stuff from, you know, 2007 that they're throwing out there. I think Army's going to run into that. I don't think Navy is going to put stuff on tape for Army in a game that they're probably going to get beat up pretty badly in. So I think even that element of surprise that Navy usually brings to the table may be lessened this week because their quarterbacks are banged up and preparing. Like, it seems like Malcolm Perry is the guy they would rather play.
Yeah, it was a coach's decision last week to play him.
So he's the converted slapback who's banged up with a badly sprained ankle. It sounds like he's probably not going to go this week. Navy then closes at Houston, then they have a week off, and then they get Army. So I would think that whatever creativity Navy has with Ivan Jasper, their offensive coordinator, they'll be saving it for Army and not spending it on Notre Dame.
So when the slot back flips it on a reverse and they pass back to Abby to start the game, I'm just going to remind you of this.
Yeah.
Moment. Okay.
They're like, no, you guys were supposed to do that in the Army game.
There's one interesting development in these games where Notre Dame, to finish strong in these games, you can't really sub defensively because no backups can stop a triple option with starters. So it is interesting that Notre Dame has to keep, you can't sub liberally and stop them from scoring. So you either have to give up points, like at least in the fourth quarter, like you did the Wake Forest game, or you have to really dedicate yourself to stopping them with your starters. And that, of course, becomes a little dangerous in the Stanford game. I think Notre Dame should give up, if they're ahead, should give up some fourth quarter points with their backups. It's okay because you're not doing style points anymore.
And
would it be real concern if your number, you know, if you're trying to get style points?
Considering you play Navy next year, getting a little bit of experience wouldn't be the worst thing in the world either. But I mean, I think overall from Notre Dame's perspective that, yeah, the style points, they don't really matter a whole lot. If you win 35-23... let's say that, like, I don't care. That's fine. If you win 35-33, I have a concern. But I have a hard time seeing that happening. I do think Notre Dame's defense, as is the case with Notre Dame's run game, they're probably going to come into this with a lot to prove. They should play a pissed off level of football that they rarely play against Navy, because Navy isn't that exciting to play against.
Fair point, though, to make here. Other than last year, we have never sat on a podcast previewing anything with Navy and thought the Navy was going to beat Notre Dame or bring it to Notre Dame, right? Last year we did. I agree. I know. It's just that there's never the look at like, yeah, you know, I just think they can, I think they'll be able to score more to beat Notre Dame. But then you see that option roll up and down the field. It's an impressive thing to watch.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I just feel like Notre Dame's mentality is much better this year, not just than last year, which is way better than, but in most years. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked to Julian Love yesterday, and he said he really likes playing against the option. Notre Dame defensive players never say that.
To get into that very quickly, Love last year, 8 tackles with a quarterback hurry and some huge plays at the edge. This will be Greer Martini in his last 3 games against the option has accumulated 28 tackles, 3 quarterback hurries, a forced fumble, and 11 stuffs. Okay. Greer Martini looks like Luke Kuechly to the option. So, and Trombetti has played it a few times. He had 6 tackles last year, 5 mm-hmm. stuffs. Tranquil's, obviously people remember Tranquil against Georgia Tech's option, had a very good game. So there's a lot of guys that have played against it a few times.
And look, last year they went into the game with a defensive tackle in Jaron Jones who didn't want to be there. They ran into mentality problems last year. That's not going to be the case this
year.
Right,
that is a huge
point. That's big. Like, if you don't want to play, you're probably not going to play very well. You know,
they didn't.
Yeah, and they didn't. So I think that getting away from that, that's where I think sort of the mentality of Notre Dame, they're in a, not, I don't want to say, well, they're really benefiting from getting their butt kicked at Miami. But the run game will have something to prove. The defense will have something to prove. And I think overall, this, despite the fact that it's a one-off in terms of the style of offense you play, they'll prove it. You know, it's not going to win people over after the Miami game, but I do think it's a game that Notre Dame should run away with through 4 quarters. So that's it for segment 1, Irish Illustrated Insider. We got questions for our readers next.
Irish Illustrated Insider is brought to you by Anderson, Augustino, and Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Augustino, and Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. First question from Caden McFarland off Twitter. And the question is, they were troubled by Brian Kelly benching Brandon Wimbush on Saturday night. How did you feel about that? And do you have any concerns that his career may go the way of Everett Golson, where he doesn't completely live up to his potential?
I thought they should bench him for that drive, the first drive, because he needed to take a seat the way things were going. He had lost confidence. This is too much hindsight to say keep him bench for the second series, because I can also understand finishing out the half without Brandon Wimbush. Obviously, when you know what happened, it's easy to say that you couldn't win the game with Ian Book in there. But I was all for benching Wimbush for one drive, not totally against it on the second drive. I think ideally it would have been one drive and, hey, get back in there, because in the second half you were going to go back to Brandon Wimbush. If Ian Book leads a touchdown drive, you're still going back to Brandon Wimbush at some point in that game, I would think.
You think so? Like,
maybe not at the end of the half, but he's not. Ian Book's not going to continually riddle Miami to get you back from 27-0 either.
I mean, if it at half is 20-7 instead of 27-0,
you probably come back out with Book. Is he going to drive them down and beat Miami? Well, it's 27-7 because Miami goes down and scores, and it has nothing to do with Ian Book or Brandon Wimbush on the kickoff.
Yeah.
It just seemed like you need Sandlot to come back and win a game against Miami, and Book wasn't going to make enough plays. Yeah. But I had no problem with benching him at the time of the original benching. He needed to sit.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about the mentality. Certainly his mentality is better than Everett Golson, because that was like at the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah,
like that was,
he doesn't have that in him.
That relationship between Kelly and Golson was not good. I don't think that this one is even close to that. I do think Wimbush is frustrated and needs to figure out how to sort of get his head around that. I think he's doing the best that he can for a college junior. But I think it remains to be seen on that one. I don't know where his career is going to go from here, because it certainly has looked a lot different this year than I thought it was going to, based on what we saw in spring ball and what we saw in August. It's really sort of been all over the map.
He's a heck of a playmaker, though.
Yeah.
With his legs. It just has to become more consistent passer. mechanically. Now, he doesn't trust his mechanics at all, so maybe maybe that can be a thing that does develop over a 9-month offseason.
And I asked him about that yesterday, and he's like, yeah, I'm getting to a, I sort of gave him a pass for last week, which is a ridiculous reality because it doesn't work that way. But I just said, you know, last week aside, you feel like you're trusting your mechanics more than you have. And he said, yeah, you know, I'm getting to the point where I'm thinking about it all the time, but last weekend was such a massive step back. I don't know if it's going to take the rest of the season for him to then get to the point where he was in October where he didn't think about it all the time.
Well, here's the thing. Let's say it's a good game against Navy. At Stanford, if he's 1-for-6 and misses a touchdown and has a pass intercepted, but Notre Dame's in it, is his next pass look like the one where it's that bubble screen where it looked like he tossed a knuckleball that he had never thrown a football, much less any ball before?
The Josh Adams one.
The Josh Adams one. Yeah. That was just, that had nothing to do with his ability. Zero to do with Brandon Bush's ability to play football. He could not get out of his head. So if you see that again, they don't, then you lose to Stanford.
Yeah, it's
if
like,
he could just play football, he should be fine. He runs so well, he just has to complement his running.
Yeah, I don't really know what to make of his inability to keep the ball down on intermediate routes. I think he was 2 of 10 in the first half for 30 yards, maybe 33 yards. But of the 10 passes, you had the overthrow to EQ. You had that hit Josh Adams in the ankle. And then pretty much everything else was high. Even the completions, the one to St. Brown was high. The one to Stepherson was really high. It was a very athletic play. Even his first pass that got broken up by Quarterman or McLeod, I can't remember which one, that was going to be very high. And you can see the safety is going to kill St. Brown over the middle. And there were a few instances where he is high and it's dangerous for the receivers. I mean, his best throws were Claypool, which was a drop, but still high. His receivers basically have to leave their feet to catch the ball.
I think isn't part of that being psyched out in that game, though? He was improving as a mid-range passer over the past 3 weeks.
I agree.
So I think a lot of it's mental, Brandon Wimbush, and it'll probably continue to be mental this year, and then he has to lose that in the offseason.
Yeah, I agree. He said Wednesday, oh, the environment was fine, excited to play it, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that he was one of a few guys who were toast.
He wasn't alone. He's not alone in that regard.
Yeah, I don't want to single him out that way, but he's the quarterback of the team, so that's how that works. Next question from multiple readers on Twitter. They want to know what we think about Josh Adams staying or leaving after his junior season.
I think he should leave because the shelf life of running back is short. He will not have a better offensive line than he has this year. I think it'll be a good offensive line next year. This is a better year than anyone listening or anyone analyzing or writing or coaching thought Josh Adams would have. And he should go pro. And he's a smart kid. They'll come back and get his degree and it won't be a problem. And he can try and get a giant nest egg kickoff to his professional life, whatever that is. And running backs do not have long. He has a high school injury. He has bad ankles. And there, as you pointed out, there's something else going on right now. He should absolutely go pro and no one should begrudge him of it.
He is hurt all the time. I mean, I'm trying to think of games where he's lasted.
He's a warrior, but he is hurt all the time.
Yeah, he is a tough dude, but he's hurt all the time. He's exposed to huge hits. I mean, I'm trying to go through the season, what games he made it through without injury. USC maybe? USC and NC State, I think?
He did USC. He definitely made it through USC because he had not to that point.
Yeah.
I don't remember if he made it through NC State or not, but that's the argument right there. That's a
2 out of 10
right
at best. So, yeah, he's going to probably finish with the all-time single-season rushing record. He's on pace for that still, despite the last two games. He should be able to put up 175, no problem, just this weekend. And then
in good health.
And like Stanford is not that great against the run either. And then just, you know, put up your 1,500 yards and go to the Heisman Trophy finalist ceremony and then turn pro. I think that would be an awesome story for him.
I totally agree. Walked off the field by Josh Adams last year at USC when he had a great, really good game, 178 yards or whatever it was. He did not have a part of his body that wasn't limping. He could not have been in more pain. And I remember someone asked him post-game, is this the healthiest you've been all year because he had a good game? And I thought, what? This poor guy is like leaning against a wall to try to do these. They do the locker, they do the interviews outside in the tunnel, and he should go pro. and he has had a great year for Notre Dame.
Yeah, no, no question about that.
AM Ruther 24, I know that name. Since it's a topic that comes up so frequently when ND is about to play Navy, do you all think the rivalry should continue on a yearly basis? Why or why not?
I don't have a strong opinion on this. If they ended it or... well, I guess my strong opinion would be don't end it entirely, but if you turned it into Michigan State, I would not have a problem with that. I don't think it needs to be protected the way Notre Dame protects it.
We know why they play it. I would not have a problem with them ending it. However, I do have a problem with why people want this ended.
Someone made a very good point on our message board that Navy should want to end the rivalry. Notre Dame should beat the crap out of them so much
right.
that Navy should be like, you know what? We can't afford to play this game because we come out of this with 8 season-ending injuries.
When it was 56-10 and 50-10, or 56-14 and 50-10 in back-to-back years for Brian Kelly against Navy, was everybody saying, we got to get out of this series, man. This is a problem. I cannot suck it up and beat them. Are you kidding me? I cannot get started on this. I understand that you don't have to play them every year. Fine, whatever. This is ridiculous. It's Navy. Just guess what? Someone might block you in the knee. Okay, fight it off and make the tackle. Yeah. It's not that big of a deal. Should UFC have stopped the series against Notre Dame because they did 9 cut blocks on Tony Rice's 65-yard touchdown run? That's the most famous run in the last 30 years for Notre Dame? No! You got cut. You fell down. Get up. There's not a ton of injuries coming out of these games. I mean, people are, right now I said that, and someone is thinking back to the 90s when 2 guys got hurt against Air Force, and they're talking about cut blocks. Where are all the giant injuries coming out of this game? I know Carlo Calabrese got hurt. Was it because of a cut block?
Or just not that athletic.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's true. Guys just get hurt. Michael Floyd got hurt in the Navy game. You know why? He wasn't trying to block, and a bunch of people landed on his knee in 2008. It's just, or in 2000, whatever year that was. he got hurt.
I got into this discussion on the message board. I feel like the games where Notre Dame comes out of Navy with injuries are the games where Notre Dame was not very well prepared to play the option. 2010, Ian Williams and Carlo Calabrese both got hurt against Navy. It would have been impossible to be less prepared that game than Notre Dame was. In 2014, when Notre Dame was running all over the place, Joe Schmidt got hurt. Not really on a cut block. It was just an injury.
He didn't blame it on a cut block. We've asked Joe Schmidt many times.
Yeah, so it's... I find it... If people want to fixate on what happened to Robert Blanton or almost happened to Robert Blanton, I think that
was just a dirty, isolated play in 2007.
That was crap.
Yeah. Like, 2009.
Don't do that.
Right, that's a dirty play. There's a dirty play in a couple games in 2010, but that's... There was a dirty play in the 2010 game you referenced when they were killing Notre Dame, and I think he dove at Zeke Mata's leg from behind. But that's nothing to do with a triple option.
Right.
Diving at someone's leg from behind is a dirty play. Navy plays hard, so you will probably, if you want to just look at this from this point of view, they play hard to the whistle all the time, even when they're losing. So I guess there's a better chance of injury if you look at it that way.
Yep,
you could. That's one way of looking at it to give the credence to that. But I just think maybe if you're Notre Dame, you could beat Navy and not worry about it.
Here's what I would say. If you wanted to take this series and turn it into a 3-team series with Air Force and Army, I wouldn't have a problem with that at all.
But people would still complain about
it. It's all option-y type stuff. But if you're so bothered by Navy that you just can't stand it anymore, then rotate these other schools through. Because really, I mean, it's God, Country, and Notre Dame. Country is before Notre Dame. So that's what Navy, Army, and Air Force are supposed to be. I would love it if they changed it up that way. But you could still do the sort of barnstorming type stuff. I mean, they play Navy in San Diego. Is it next year?
Next year.
That's an awesome trip. So don't end the series now.
At least give us another year.
Whatever you do, don't bring up the series.
But if you wanted to rotate through the other military academies, I think that'd be fine too.
I wouldn't have a problem with that at all. All right, Irish by the Sea. Looking over the assistant coach's performance this season, do you see anyone who won't be back next year? Yikes.
Wow. It was easier last year at this time. I would say
last week.
That's well because of one. They couldn't decide which coach was going to win the Broyles Award 8 days ago. Now there's I don't see that. Obviously, the wide receiving position is the biggest disappointment. I'm not going to put that all on Dell Alexander. There's no other position that you could possibly consider for this. The running backs are going to be statistically the best group, and 25 years.
Yeah, I really, it's...
Oh, I guess they're talking about maybe Tommy Rees is involved in this.
Could be, I guess.
Because he was hired as a grad assistant. He will become a... which all that means is he gets paid from the grad assistant pool, but next year he'll be...
And he can recruit.
And he can recruit next year. He can recruit off campus next year and get paid from the assistant coaches pool. That will increase. But no, of one-year coaches then, so Dell Alexander and Tommy Rees are first-year coaches, there's certainly nobody's going
to
be.
No. Yeah, the answer to this question is no.
1 week ago was which coaches can we possibly retain because of all the awards they're going to win.
Should Mike Elko be named coach in waiting? That was 2 weeks ago. Foster Brooks, does this season come down to getting into and winning a New Year's Six Bowl? Anything else would simply fuel a fire to the Fire BK crowd and open seats on the Notre Dame bandwagon?
Fair or not, yes. 11-2 winning a New Year's Six Bowl is the appropriate end to this season to make it a great season.
I want to remind you of something you said in the preseason where you described 8-4 as purgatory.
Yes.
And now you're describing 10-2 as purgatory.
10-2 is great. 10-3 with a bowl loss again would just be not the perfect way to, not a fitting end to this season. It would just make me think of the teams that finished 10-3 and 9-3. Mm-hmm. I think they'd be better than like Brady Quinn's senior year team that wasn't a real 10-3, but is it that much better than the 2015 team if you go 10-3 and lose two of your last four games? And one, you get housed.
Well, you lose three of your last four games in this scenario.
Oh, you're right. You're right, yeah.
And including the last two. That's bad. Yeah, that's...
No, not three of your last four. If you go 10-3, you've lost two of your last four. Because they already had a loss. You're thinking of nine wins right now. You would lose... They're not going to lose three of their last four games. They're going to lose two of their last... It'll be two of their last four. It would just be such a down note. I understand. Now, 10-3 would be fine. It's a B-plus season.
Yeah.
It's just not special. And Notre Dame hasn't had a special season other than 2012 since 93. You need one. They've been so good. They can go out. And they're not going to play one of the four best teams in the country.
No, they'll just get Ohio State again.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's not fair, but I do think it's the only fitting way. I think if Notre Dame loses... I think if Notre Dame loses a New Year's Six bowl game, it's a lot of people are, fair or not, will just be same old, same old. That's the way it ended. Now, it doesn't mean it wasn't a good year, but perception with a fan base is reality, isn't it? When your coach enters his ninth year, a little bit.
Yeah. The fact that they haven't won a New Year's Six style bowl since the 93 season, the 94 Cotton Bowl, is ridiculous.
And you'll have given him 9 years, Brian Kelly, 8 years to have done it. So it's not like it's all on his fault. It's not all his fault, of course, because they didn't win without before him. But he's got two iterations of generations of players here.
Right.
He's recruited through two full. I mean, your first guys came in there for 4 years. I know Charlie Weiss recruited some of them. I don't think he was complaining that he inherited Manny Te'o and Zach Martin, though, right?
No.
So he had those guys. He had another group of his, and now this is like his third group of recruits, basically. So it's fair. Because of what has happened in the past, taken singularly, this is just a really good year, no matter what.
Yeah, I agree.
It's hard to take it singularly, though.
Right they need to have sort of a Music City Bowl, but the bowl game is a lot bigger.
We played somewhere warmer.
Something good to feel about. Something to feel good about in the offseason.
Dashing Domer, is there anything that Indy learned schematically the past 2 weeks that will change their approach the rest of the season? Or do the remaining opponents allow them to put off serious changes until the offseason, or at least until bowl prep?
I don't think it's a question of you're going to need to go back to the lab in the off season to fix some things. I mean, there are some things. Yeah, exactly. But the inability to defend the quarterback draw has been a problem the last couple of weeks. I asked Drew Tranquil about that yesterday. And he said he referenced Wake Forest. And what did we say after Wake Forest? At least I did. It's not a blueprint issue because you're not going to run into Mike Elko defense mastery, 41 career starts, and it's just that kind of setup. But in bits and pieces, they really struggled to defend Malik Rozier running the ball last weekend, and that sort of got the ball rolling for Miami to put the game away in the first half. So that's a small picture thing that they need to get cleaned up. Because, I mean, let's say they run into Ohio State in a bowl game. I think JT Barrett's probably going to run the ball a whole lot. So that could be a real problem for them. And that's something that they can get cleaned up now. In terms of Brandon Wimbush and his fundamentals, I think that's probably more of a spring practice type thing.
I would agree.
You're going to go with up performances and down performances until then. But There are certainly some smaller picture things that can get fixed.
I think bowl prep is also key to that end. Mm-hmm. It's a short week for Stanford. That's an underrated aspect of these things with switching gears from the triple option to Stanford. You can kill Navy, but you still play the triple option. And of course, you have to end the series because you might have gotten hit in the knee at some point. So
yeah.
I think that bowl prep would include some tweaks defensively. They saw something late that showed up on film that other coaches saw. So I don't know if you have time for that for Stanford, though. You can make a guy cognizant with a spy on a they've been able to spy on quarterbacks before. That's why the Rogier thing was weird. But I also like to point out that they were just missing tackles after he. There were gaping holes. But the one you put on Twitter was a hole for 5 yards, and he turned into a 16-yard touchdown, making people flail. That was the definition of flailing tackle. So there were other holes. It's not just like it was bad tackling, but if you tackle, it's not the end of the world when the quarterback escapes once in a while, and Notre Dame didn't tackle.
Yeah. All right, final question. Terry Benedict, with two games remaining, what freshman has impressed you the most this year? If the pool is too small, you can include redshirt freshmen as well.
First guy that comes to mind is Hainsey for basically starting a whole year. He took his lumps, but that's a tough thing.
And continues to.
But in terms of impressing me for the future, Robert Hainsey is number one for the future. In terms of the redshirt freshman thing, because like Khalid Kareem's not a redshirt freshman, but he came on late. Mm-hmm. Julian McQuarrie had the good start, also not a redshirt freshman. Tony Jones, I just had such a high opinion of. I guess he hasn't impressed me this year, although he's been a little better recently. For the future, Robert Hainsey is a player going forward. Cole Kmet's a player going forward. I guess, you know what? Tagovailoa-Amosa.
Yeah.
That's the guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Expected nothing.
He has to be the guy. You know, I think...
It took me a while to come up with him for some reason.
Because you didn't want to try to pronounce his last name.
Yeah, exactly. If you do it fast enough, though, you get it.
Yeah. That's the key. Don't think about it. You know, the redshirt freshmen, there really aren't guys that even fit. Deion McIntosh.
I forget that
he's a redshirt freshman. I feel like he's a junior. So he'd have to be in there. And Tommy Kramer's a redshirt freshman,
even though
he also feels like he's been here forever. So those would be two guys at least worth mentioning. But, would you say Ian Book has impressed you? Or just
he was what I thought.
Been okay?
Yeah. The interception touchdown to Gates all impression for me.
Yeah. But in terms of guys, you know, talking to people around the program, guys that they're high end in the freshman class, I've heard a ton of good things about Aaron Banks and Josh Lugg.
Probably the most important people you could hear a ton of good things about.
Yeah, you need to hear good things about them. They still love, you know, Kmet and Wright, even though they haven't done a lot this year. Michael Young, they're high on. Darnell Yule remains developmental. Kurt Heinisch has still been a surprise to me, the fact that he plays played at all and has done a couple good things. But beyond that, I think if you're looking for concerns of the freshman class, linebacker and safety, I get the impression that they're not entirely comfortable with what they have there. So, I mean, linebacker is, that's a concern now, they know. But at safety with Jordan Genmar-Keith and Isaiah Robertson, I get the impression that they're like, not quite sure what they have there yet.
You know, going back to the question about if you lose Drew Tranquil, I'm curious if Bilal will try and just remain at Rover and they would go Coney and Jonathan Jones, because it is easier to fill a hole with a guy that's a good aggressive run stopper than it is to play Rover if you're not capable of playing Rover. Would they continue to work Bilal for another full year at Rover and insert Jonathan Jones? He has a redshirt year, Bilal, too, so that would be a 2-year guy.
Good point.
I just like the run-plugging guy can play his role next to Tavon Coney. Now, Bilal, that assumes that Bilal becomes a good Rover, of course. But he would just be challenged by...
I wonder if they would do a Bilal, Coney, Jonathan Jones 3-for-2 the way that they're doing right now. If that would be a possibility.
That would definitely be a possibility.
Coney is never going to come off the field next year. But then that opens up the Rover position. Who the heck is that going to be? Is Jordan Genmar-Keith going to slide down? Shane Simon's mid-year enrollment?
Owusu-Koramoah will be involved.
Yes.
But it's a starting from scratch thing for him. He was in the role in August, but it's like he was not on the varsity.
There was never a chance that he was going to play. So I don't know. I mean, linebacker is a huge question mark next year. I don't think that.
We don't know.
Adams has multiple shoulder surgeries, and Drew Wright is kind of undersized. So it's, I don't see where they're going to get something out of those guys next year. So we'll see. But on the offensive line, they're very high on Lug and Banks. I've even heard good things about Colin Grunhardt as like one of those walk-ons that will earn a scholarship down the road.
Brian Kelly mentioned him kind of as one of the highlight guys in early August. It was an interesting, I think he might be, that. Sometimes he mentions guys that are helping the team practice, he's a coach. It's his prerogative to do it that way, not just give us, oh, is Colin Grunhardt going to take the job from, but it's, those guys are important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's the freshman class. It's fine that it remains to be seen how good it is, because they've only been here for 1 year and only half of them have played. But I do think this question from Terry Benedict, probably one that we can answer with a lot more clarity around the blue-gold game than we can going into senior day. So that's it for this week's Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. We'll be back Monday to recap Navy, preview Stanford a little bit. It's a short week for us, but we will talk to you Saturday. Pre-game instant analysis and post-game instant analysis from Notre Dame Stadium Senior Day, Notre Dame versus Navy.